Entering the spotlight at a young age is about as double-edged a sword as they come. While it technically gives you more time than anyone else to stack your fortune and leave a lasting imprint on the world, history has taught us that far too many of these teenage stars wind up losing their mind somewhere along the line.
How she made so many mills, you know.
A lot of mills.
Ask Raven how that feels.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of Raven and Mickey Mouse, you had that line and no fear.
Yeah.
You know what line I'm talking about?
Yeah. Tell Minnie Mouse my sack like Raven did when she was black. When you hear that rat-a-tat, I suggest you n***a cat.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I meant just that.
Just that?
Just that, yeah.
So you know? What do you mean to say Raven did when she was black?
I mean, I told you in the first interview. She gave me, and then I gave her some.
You know,
but at the end of the day, I mean, like I said last time, I stand by her.
But that's not the only grim fate that they suffer. Because where other artists get the chance to make their early mistakes when the pressure is off and no one is looking, being shot into superstardom as a kid means that your failures happen in the full view of the public. Sometimes, things go past the point of no return, where they can never fully recapture the kind of stature they once had. And in an industry as cutthroat as hip-hop, being elevated to fame as a kid can wind up not only being a death sentence to your career, but can do real, lasting damage to your sense of self. And these are rap child stars who fumbled the bag. This time, there's no better place to start than one former teen sensation, who was signed to two of the biggest producers of our time, and is still better known for the drama in her personal life. Of course, I'm talking about Teyana Taylor, a prodigious star who could sing, dance, and rap. Teyana seemed like she was built for showbiz when the Harlem native signed to Pharrell's Star Trek imprint in 2005 when she was just 15. From the outset, she was basking in her newfound stardom, and even documented her 16th birthday party alongside Skateboard P in the famed MTV show, My Super Sweet 16.
We're here to celebrate Teyana's birthday. She's 16 years old. I need y'all to make some noise.
But there wasn't exactly much to show for her time at Star Trek. Aside from one mixtape entitled From a Planet Called Harlem and a few features, her spell under Pharrell's tutelage was pretty uneventful. And once she got the chance, she departed in 2012. But she maintained that there was no bad blood.
I officially got my release from Star Trek in the scope.
Congratulations.
I've been signed with her for 6 years. Thank you. And it's like the people, they see the glory but don't know the story.
Yeah.
You know, so when it's not music being put out or when you're not moving, it's just automatic. They blame it on you. You're not doing anything. What do you do?
Yeah.
Different things like that. Not knowing the politics of the music industry. Mm-hmm. Contracts are certain things you can't do. You can't just go and make a mixtape. You know what I'm saying? You can't just go and put out stuff and make videos.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So I officially got my release from Star Trek in the scope.
How long does it, even that too, just with lawyers and stuff, even if there's nothing bitter, it takes a long time.
Yeah,
to do,
it was a process to even get the release, but it was, we, everybody bowed out gracefully. It is no beef. I love Interscope. I love Star Trek. It's always love for us, my big brother. But now it was time for me to go from the caterpillar to the butterfly.
Absolutely.
You know, like, and now I had to fly away from the nest and, you know, and venture out on my own.
At the time, this was likely representative of the young woman's true feelings. But as she got older, Teyana views things a little differently. For one thing, she had missed just how much she idolized the Neptunes' mastermind.
Getting signed to a man, you know, it was like a figure to me, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh my God, like, you know, I looked at these people like figures, you know what I'm saying? Whether it was as a dad or as a brother, it didn't matter. So it was like, you didn't see me, when you didn't hear me, you didn't protect me, you just kind of just like fed me to the wolves type shit without even probably even knowing, you know what I'm saying? And those were some of those conversations still need to be had. They had a really, 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 really deep and honest conversation with Pharrell. Mm. He was the first person to sign me, and he was Skateboard P, I was Skateboard T, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was, you cannot tell me that wasn't my pops, you feel me? Like, and I really, like, looked
up to
him.
Did he know that, though?
Yeah, you know what's crazy? He didn't have kids at the time. Like, he wanted kids, and he would be like, yo, she called me her pops. Like, he was really proud of that, you know what I'm saying?
But with the benefit of maturity, she now believes that he didn't provide her the sense of security and guidance that she hoped for. In turn, she felt that this impacted both her life and that early stage of her career.
And you know, at the same time, you know, he's not confrontational at all. He's literally one of the sweetest people in just the whole wide world. It wasn't that he didn't protect me. I just think a lot of hands started going into the cookie jar. You know, like, it's P. Like, he not about to be like, no, y'all niggas back up. You feel me? Like, maybe he was hurt about some things. Maybe, you know what I'm saying? You don't know. Maybe it could have been a thing of pride and ego at the time. To me, as a 15-year-old, was, you didn't protect me. You let everybody mishandle me. You know what I'm saying? When I signed to you, you know what I'm saying? Like, and you let everybody get in the way. You let everybody break us apart. You didn't protect me, you know?
Following a brief spell as an independent, Tiana would soon be summoned towards the label of a man who saw merits in her talents even before she was a free agent. After appearing across My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and the label's compilation project Cruel Summer, Taylor would ink a deal with Kanye West's Good Music. While there, she developed a taste for Ye's perfectionism, famously refusing to play the boss her debut album on the label until she deemed it to be perfect. They'd be like, well damn T, can you send the album in? Can we hear something? She said during a Complex interview, but I'm like, I'll send it when it's right. I learned that from Ye. Like, he don't care about who's in the room. If you don't feel like it sounds right, you can't hear it yet. When I played Ye the album, we all went over to his house. He was like, you mind if I have a copy? I was like, I'd rather just get it right, then I'll give you a copy. All he could do is laugh, because he knows I get it from him. With her debut album 7 landing in the top 20, Tiana finally had a foothold in the culture, but it's fair to say that she didn't actually do much better under Kanye's advice than when she worked with Pharrell. On her Project 7, Kanye remained out of the way, allowing Tiana and her producer Pope to oversee the album's creation. But next time around, she'd be bundled into the Good Music mix. And to say that this didn't sit right with her would be an understatement. Back in 2018, Ye unveiled the Good Music Summer Slate, which featured 5 albums consisting of 7 tracks. Among them was KTSE, the second album from Tiana, which was set to arrive as the last project from the series. Technically, it's Tiana's second most successful project, eventually being certified gold. But from the outset, Tiana was skeptical about how it was going to work.
I didn't know, like, ahead of time that it wouldn't be any singles or visuals. I didn't know none of that, but I knew that it was going to be the 5 album thing, and they wanted mine to be last. He wanted mine the biggest. Like, that's what I knew, like, the way they sauced it up. I was so.
And when it did come time to work, she found herself being lost in the shuffle, with the record becoming so fractured that she wasn't given a final cut of the project before it hit the internet.
I mean, majority of the songs were done when put that date out. You know what I'm saying? So it ain't like, oh, it's crunch time and we don't have the records. Like, it ain't that. It was just a lot of miscommunications as far as, like, you know, clearances and certain versions. And, you know, like, when an album dropped, I didn't hear that version when an album dropped. So when an album dropped, I was like, you know, I'm not even going to, like, see what's out. Like, I just want to, like, read what's going on. I mean, everybody was like, it's too short. These songs only got 1 verses and 2 verses and da 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 da.
At the time, it seemed like she was still attempting to do damage control and clearly still had faith that things could be remedied. But after witnessing her face so many setbacks, her fans simply wanted her to get out the major label system. Tiana has an amazing voice. She needs a label that will help her grow. Good Music isn't giving her enough credit. I don't give a fuck if Kanye is family. She really deserves better. She's not satisfied with her album. But over time, her desire to be diplomatic wore off. And after the release of what was then billed as her final project in 2020's The Album, Taylor said that working under the Good Music structure actually led her to abandon her music career.
You know, the label wasn't really hearing me and seeing me. I felt underappreciated, you know? So I'm like, for my mental health, my mental well-being, and to stay, you know, strong for my kids, like, let me just put this on ice for a little bit. It's not that I retired permanently. It's more like, you know, I just don't feel like I want to move another inch for a company.
After bowing out on a high with a much-loved album, Tiana was focused on her family life. But 10 years after they got together, it was revealed in 2023 that Taylor was reeling from the fallout from her relationship with basketball player Iman Shumpert, a duo that had 2 kids together. They seemed like a tight-knit unit, with any squabbles they had looking like they were easily solvable.
How do you know when I'm mad at?
You can start going deep into your phone. Like, you usually just be on the phone, but then when you mad, you like this on the phone.
That is not true.
And then you be like this.
Like, that is not true.
If I'm sitting right here, your hand will magically go over your face, but act like you holding your phone.
That is not true.
You do.
I just wear glasses. I can't see that.
But as they went their separate ways, things got messy. And whenever Tiana has been in the news of late, it's been over accusations that the two are playing dirty in their divorce. As they tried to work out the terms, Tiana's legal team claimed Iman consistently demonstrates a clear disregard for the safety of the minor children, alongside treating her cruelly and displaying extreme narcissistic behavior throughout the majority of their marriage. As for the Brooklyn Net, he denied all of the above. My client, Mr. Iman Shumpert, has never whatsoever leaked any allegations allegations or claims stated in any of the pleadings. His lawyer, Stephen C. Steele, reportedly relayed to TMZ Sports concerning Teyana Taylor's statements amid their divorce. Mr. Shumpert adamantly denies that he has provided any information to any media, specifically but without limitations. He denies that he leaked any information which may have served as the basis for the multiple news reports preceding the trial of this matter. I mean, some of the filings after, it's hurtful to see. Iman Shumpert said of Teyana Taylor, but other than that, people was discussing the good stuff all the time. But that's kind of what we put out there. So it's like, they got to discuss the good stuff. So I can't really tell them, don't discuss the bad. I've gotta let it go. Yet, as his supporters painted her in a bad light, Teyana denied allegations of being a gold digger.
I walked away with all his properties. I walked away with all my properties. Iman walked away with a car that I bought him. That's clear. But let's also, we're not going to sit here and make it seem like Teyana's using Iman for anything. Like, at the end of the day, yes, Iman made his money and so did I. I've been in this business since I was 15 years old. We're not going to act like my bank account is like, nah, we're not doing that. I've had several Jordans. I've had several movies, several deals, all still active. And the crazy part about it is I said nothing when him and his lawyer told the internet, oh, Teyana's making more money. Teyana's bringing more money a month in than Iman is. Just because Iman played ball don't mean that this is a thing where it's like I'm trying to take money off of him. Iman haven't played ball since 2020. So yes, actively during the divorce, I was bringing more money than him in. I am. So it's just like, how are we sitting here making it seem like I'm being a gold digger or taking from him? And we're not going to do that. I bought my tour bus with my hard-earned money. I bought my Sprinter with my hard-earned money. I bought my Maybach with my hard-earned money. I bought my Maybach after Iman crashed my Rolls Royce and never replaced it, that I also bought. Okay, what are we talking about? Every single car that I walked away with, I literally paid for out of my pocket. Out of my pocket. Now, at this point, I made myself clear. Y'all gonna think what y'all wanna think. Regardless, y'all gonna still run with y'all narratives because that's what people do. But one thing you will have clear is that Teyana ain't take nothing from Iman. Oh, and that $1 million y'all claiming, that seven-figure, eight-figure, that it was a one-time fee of $1 million in damages. When Iman crashed the $400,000 Rolls Royce and Iman did whatever other stuff he did, that was the things he had to pay me back. Iman left me with a whole lot of shit. That's another thing. Let's be clear with that too. When you're dividing marital assets, when you're dividing houses and stuff, if this still bills a part of it, if it's snatched away from the both of us. So to think that even if that was the case that I couldn't get a car and boom, 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 like that shit means nothing. That means nothing. That means nothing. That means nothing at all. I never tried to send Iman to jail. I'm still not trying to send Iman to jail. However, I have to file a motion to get him to leave me alone so we can both go and live our life in peace. Like, I'm confused because y'all know peace is what I want. Like, I don't want no smoke, bruh. Like, I'm too happy right now. Bitch, I'm too happy right now. Bitch, I'm too happy right now. Bitch, you think I want to sit here, motherfucker? You talking about some divorce? That only makes me look like I'm coming with a whole bunch of baggage. Like, nobody want to do that. But yeah, like I said, it is what it is. This divorce, these settlements and all this fake false shit, all this stuff is old. They tried to put this out back in June.
In fact, she lost major money due to being so outspoken about the breakup when the judge found the singer and artist in contempt and ordered her to pay the athlete $70,000. After the fact, she insisted she didn't regret it in the slightest.
But now it's like really hitting differently because it's assumed that I moved on. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, she moved on. But yo, she took this person for everything. And it's just like, now I'm being called out my name. Like, I'm like, wait, yeah. What? And then I took this, I took that. I'm like, wait, what? I'm confused, you know?
It just seemed like you had to pay a $70,000 bill for you defending yourself.
And it was the best little coin I ever spent. I mean, it. But when I say I want to get put through the mattress in peace, but let's look at the pattern. We went to court July 25th. This thing about me paying him $70,000 or his lawyer $70,000 came out a week before my album dropped. This is when Hard Part came out with Joe and Jada and mm-hmm. the song was going viral and everybody was like, yo, this song is fire. Now, 5 minutes later, Teyana is ordered. She's held in contempt. Da, 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 da. So now I was looking like, oh, so she went on live and lied. And it's like,
No, it was technicality.
They eventually finalized the terms, with Taylor able to keep four marital properties with an approximate $10 million value as assets from their shared estate. Meanwhile, Schumper will pay $8,000 a month and cover private school fees for their daughters. In the meantime, Taylor has praised her new boyfriend Aaron Pierre as they embarked on a new relationship, hoping to keep it as private as possible in the process.
Talk about Aaron Pierre. Now, can I officially say that's your man? Is that, are we allowed to say that? Or are you guys just very friendly? You know, I want to be respectful of what you would like me to say as far as your connection, the chemistry that we see between you two.
I think that this world, this new,
yes,
whatever the is going on in the world,
yes,
is not gentle, and it's crazy.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. Mm. And you know, I want to try something different where
okay.
I'm not just like, hey, yes, what's going on? And boom, boom, boom. Because people are preying on your downfall. People yeah. are preying on the health that you are building.
Mm.
What me and Aaron have, it's very healthy and it's very gentle. It's very soft and it's very kind and it's very sweet and it's very warm. And it's one of the best feelings that I've ever had. And most importantly, it's so safe. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want us to be robbed of that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Hold on.
I don't want us to be robbed of that. He's so special to me, you know, and I'm filled with so much gratitude to have him in my life. And I'm just so grateful for him and just everything that comes with him, you know, and I want to protect.
Now reemerging from retirement with a new album, Tiana has claimed that this time she's doing it her way.
I saw you say in an interview that what you were going through before you retired felt like punishment, but now it feels like it was divine timing.
It was preparation. It wasn't punishment. It was preparation for what was already written. And even through that, like dealing with retiring and all of those different things, I was dealing with a lot, you know, postpartum,
you know. You're too creative for that.
But also think that circumstances too, because what got me out of retirement, you know what I'm saying? I came back on my own terms and I came back happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, what if I was in a space where I was still stagnant in a certain space? Mm-hmm. I would probably still be retired right now.
Mm-hmm. In August, she dropped her new project Escape Room, which came complete with features from Jill Scott, Tyla, Lucky Day, and Kate Renata. But even with that kind of star power behind her, it only sold 14,500 units, making it the worst performance of her career thus far. By devoting so much of her golden years as an artist to labels that didn't know how to manage the former teen star, Tiana has never reached her full potential. And now, it looks like she never will when people are more invested in her personal life. But not every child rapper has to witness their early potential go to waste. Instead, they have to suffer the opposite fate, where they need to spend the rest of their life and career trying to recapture those past glories. For an example of this, look no further than Bow Wow. Lesser known as Shad Moss, he began rapping at age 6, and by 11, he hooked up with Jermaine Dupri to begin his career in all its glory. From his 2000 debut album Beware of Dogs onwards, Bow Wow racked up 11 top 30 hits and 3 platinum albums along the way. But as he got older, the industry grew progressively less interested in him. And in the period that followed 2009's New Jack City 2, his first record to bear a parental advisory sticker, peaking at number 16 on the Billboard charts, the Bow Wow train abruptly came off the tracks. And as of 2025, he has yet to release another album. However, this hasn't came without his flowers. And as he became the artist with the most Hot 100 hits of all time, Drake assigned Bow Wow credit for molding the hip-hop landscape of today.
Everybody wants to have drinks, and everybody wants to celebrate and turn up. Oh, I just had to see Wizzle. I had to see Wizzle in person. If it wasn't for you, there wouldn't be no... That's why I'm on. You know
So if this was the case, how did he fade away? Over the years, Bow Wow has tried to keep himself in the spotlight while staying out of the booth, starring in movies like Roll Bounce and even hosting BET's 106 in Park for years. But along the way, he's done plenty of things which have diminished his credibility. Most notably, there was the infamous hashtag Bow Wow challenge that clowned his use of a stock image of a private plane before he'd be exposed by a fan who shared a photo of the rapper flying as a passenger on a regular flight. Despite all of his achievement and the fan fear that once was attached to his name, nothing has a shelf life like becoming a meme. And to this day, Bow Wow is still trying to emerge from the rubble of this fake flex.
Oh, yeah. So basically, I was traveling to New York, and I was on a commercial flight. So I saw a picture that I liked. It was my mood picture, so I posted it. I put travel day. So someone's on the plane, they take a picture of me and says, well, that's kind of odd. How is he flying private when he's right here in front of me? So he sent the picture in, and then once he sent the picture of me on the plane, it, you know, all hell just broke loose. And
initially, his attempts at damage limitation did nothing to stop the hate or allegations that he was broke. He wasn't flying Delta first class either. He was flying economy. You wanted people to believe you were on the big boy plane and got busted. Over time, he eventually admitted to his mistakes after realizing he could no longer outrun the embarrassment and thus had to own it.
Gary Owens. I was on my TikTok and his special came up and he was talking about it in his stand-up. But it's to show you, bro, I'm normal and I make mistakes and I can own up to it.
Right.
And you know me, Jez, we done been on since then.
Yeah.
There we go. I had no reason to do it, but right. I did it. And right. I got caught flexing.
Right.
The fake flex.
Right.
When he's not being clowned for attempting to play the part of a jet setter who flies private, Bow Wow has also been slandered by Orlando Brown, who claims he's hooked up with him in the past.
Said, me saying that Bow Wow's
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about That's So Raven. Like, on the set.
It's the same thing.
What was the remember
moment? Okay, market? Everybody, no, Bow Wow was Raven.
Huh? Don't say that on here.
I said that.
Bow Wow's a good person, and what you said
is Bow Wow was Raven, and no, I had
not.
The pussy.
No, he's not.
Liar.
And you know what? You and Bow Wow has never been in the same room. I taught them, and he proved it, and he said you haven't. So stop capping on his name.
I f***ed him, and I f***ed him like this.
But it's fair to say that this is something Bow Wow strenuously denies and insisted it's all for publicity on Orlando's part.
He ain't no fool. He ain't no fool. I seen an interview where he said, people pay me. And when I get the bag, however much the money is determines,
what I'm
am
say.
I going to be crazy? Because I can be Orlando and we can have a casual conversation. We can talk. I always thought he was talented. Always thought he was talented. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's had troubles. I ain't even going to get into all that. That's his personal business. That's his life. Yeah. But outside of that, I've always thought he was talented as hell. And I always thought that since all of these people put him on their platforms for clickbait, somebody need to put the boy on TV and give him a real job. Right. I always said that. There is talent.
After being co-signed by Snoop Dogg at just 6 years old, Bow Wow has been in the public eye for the vast majority of his time on Earth. And while he no doubt enjoyed the perks that came with it, he has since suggested that he wished he got to experience some of the trappings of a normal life. Just woke up. Thinking to myself like, man, damn, I never been to prom nor college, Bow Wow wrote. I want to pledge so bad. I wish I was part of a fraternity. Y'all think I'm lucky because of my lifestyle, but I really want what y'all have. Because of the rigors of fame, he's never been able to hold down a serious relationship either.
What's the longest relationship you been in?
Me and C.
Oh, damn.
That's
I forgot about you and Sierra.
Bruh.
Were you with Angela Simmons as well?
I wouldn't say me and Ange ever made it.
Okay.
To that point. But Erica was a long one.
How long was the Sierra one?
C was probably like 2 years.
I heard
not
that.
Maybe a little bit longer. Erica was a long one. And my ex, who I was just with, I would consider that was long.
But even if Bow Wow has fantasized about living the life of a civilian, he doesn't regret the time period that he found hip-hop notoriety in.
When you look back on your career and when you entered the industry, do you look back and say, like, you got in at the perfect time, or do you wish you maybe would have waited until you learned more? Was it overwhelming when you look back on your younger career life?
Nah. I'm happy that I came in at the time I came in because I got a chance to be a part of some real shit. So I'm coming in, like, with the heavyweights. You know what I'm saying? You got John, 50, Nelly, Eminem, like everybody who came in that 2000, like that was the shit. I'm privileged to come from that era because of the things that I was able to learn and stick with, you know, morals, value for music, what real good music sounds like, the motherfuckers who are going to be here for years to come, the motherfuckers who come out, throw out one single hot for 6 months during the summer, light the clubs up, then they go away. Like, I don't want to be a part of that shit.
Along the way, he's been critical of modern hip hop and claimed that his rise wouldn't be possible today.
Me, I say it's luck, I say it's strategy. I say it was strategic the way we did it, but it's just hard, man. And also, I think a lot of the music that comes from like the younger artists, it sounds the same too. So a lot of this shit can get lost in the sauce. And then, you know, some cats fizzle out quicker than others and some can withstand the time. But I don't think we'll see another, especially a black young rapper at like 12, 13 come in. It's going to be tough because I see it now, but it's more like Nickelodeon driven. It's not crossing over into how I got into it. And a lot of it is because of the, you know, the Snoop Dogg nod. You know, I had a lot of big homies around me. Jermaine, just guys that are highly respected. So it's like, if I push this little kid out, it's a reason. And it's like, let's pay attention to this motherfucker. Whereas now, there is none of that. It's like a free for all, really.
This likely comes as a shock to some people. And by the sounds of it, Bow Wow never loved the art form that he's best known for. This news dates back to 2016 where he tweeted, "My whole life I hated rapping. Folks don't know that. I always wanted to be a comedian growing up. I wanted to act." He later echoed these sentiments as he prepped for a versus against Soulja Boy in 2020, claiming, "Y'all see why I don't want to rap no motherfucking more. This is exactly why," he said in a since deleted Instagram post. "I'm at peace, man. I like hosting my shit, making more money than half of y'all rappers. I like doing my podcast with Fox. This shit right here is the number one reason why I don't want to rap no more. This is the reason why I do movies, and I do so much other shit, because the rap shit brings stress. I don't like no motherfucking stress. I haven't been stressed all motherfucking year up until right now. I don't fuck with rap. I hate doing this shit." Now best known as a media personality rather than a rapper, Bow Wow's current position in the culture is a far cry from the peak of his powers. But his fans are ultimately just happy to see that he's still relatively well adjusted and hasn't suffered some of the grim fates of other kids who were once famous. A lot of people like to disrespect Bow Wow because he was a child star, but honestly, that man wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He literally worked for everything he got. Unfortunately, not everyone gets to escape the past of child stardom with their health intact, in the way that Bow Wow has at least. In fact, one of the men who arguably paved the way for him unfortunately met his end before he even saw his mid-30s. If you're an older head or had older brothers, you'll remember Criss Cross well. A duo of 13 years old who went by Mac Daddy and Daddy Mac, the kids signed to Rough House courtesy of a deal brokered by their manager and soon to be So-So Def Records head Jermaine Dupri. Before long, their debut single Jump dropped, and suddenly, the little kids Chris Smith and Chris Kelly were stars. Peaking at number one on the charts at a time when hip-hop tracks didn't regularly do that, the pair fascinated everyone with their youthful exuberance and bizarre signature style.
"Now, maybe you guys could, like, stand up and show it to us. You've got on, everything on backwards, don't you? Like, this is the crisscross. Maybe you can turn around now. Who thought that up? Who made that up?"
"Well, it was me and Chris and our producer, Jermaine Dupri. Us three together."
"One thing is, how does that work when, like, you gotta pee? How do you do that?"
"We just unbuckle our belts, because our pants are big and
drops down?"
"Yeah.
And it works. Okay, you don't have your shoes on backwards, by the way."
"Nah."
As their debut album, Totally Crossed Out, emerged, they were such a hit that they wound up touring with Michael Jackson and even got their own video game for Sega. And for a little while, they had the world in their hands. And it would all come from organic beginnings.
"So how do you like being successful?"
"It's a lot of fun. I mean, everything happens so fast.
Uh-huh.
We just want to thank all our fans out here for supporting us."
"You guys are the youngest successful rappers in history of music. How old are you, both of you?"
"Both 13.
"Both 13.
Yeah.
Now, how were you guys discovered?"
"One day we was walking down the mall and we saw our producer Jermaine Dupri with one of his groups. And we went over to the group to get an autograph because they had a record out at the time. And while we was over there getting an autograph, he asked us if we rap, sing, and dance. We told him we rap and dance a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we took each other's numbers. Then we just hooked up and started doing demos."
Though you might only know of the track Jump today, Criss Cross were not one-hit wonders. And their second album was certified platinum. Even their third record, Young, Rich, and Dangerous, went gold, peaking at number 15 on the charts in the pre-internet era, where that was still relatively difficult. Eventually, they reached their height when Mac Daddy and Daddy Mac won the Best New Hip-Hop Artist at the AMAs.
"Hey, yo, first of all, we want to thank God for making all this happen. Next, we want to thank our fans, because we wouldn't be here today, for selling 5 million records, too. Next."
Back then, it seemed perfectly normal that these two kids were such an integral part of the hip-hop landscape. But with the benefit of hindsight, people were alarmed by the damage such exposure to fame had on them in their formative years. It's funny, as a kid, we all listened to them and thought they were so cool. But going back and sifting through all of their interviews, they always seemed so disconnected. Could be that they were trying to be too cool for school, but they were just kids. I often wonder if they weren't happy after they discovered their popularity. Although they never formally split up, the pair ultimately went their separate ways in 1996 and wouldn't perform on stage together again until 2013 at the So-So Def 20th anniversary show. But unfortunately, this would be the last time, as by April of that year, Chris Kelly would be dead from a drug overdose after a lengthy battle with substances including heroin and cocaine. And as his life was cut short, his former manager Jermaine Dupri was left struggling to talk about it in interviews. To the world, Chris was Mac Daddy, but to me, he was a son I never had. said Jermaine in a statement at the time. As much as you think I taught him, he taught me. God has blessed me in the presence of so many naturally talented people, and Chris was one. When I think about it, I spent more time with Chris and Chris than damn near anybody in my whole life. So you can imagine how bad this hurts. To millions of fans worldwide, he was the trend-setting, backward pants-wearing, one half of Chris Cross who loved making music, said his mother, Donna Kelly Pratt. But to us, he was just Chris, the kind, generous, and fun-loving life of the party. In the tale of Chris Kelly, we can see the hole that can emerge in a child star's life after the fame evaporates and they struggle to find something to fill it with. But for some MCs who obtained a taste of success at a young age, they quickly realized they didn't want to subject their minds to the pain of the spotlight. A clear case of this is none other than Diggy Simmons. The son of the legendary Rev Run, Diggy grew up in front of the world on Run's house, but didn't release his first mixtape, The First Flight, until the last season of 2009. And to him, this was a conscious decision as he was trying to sidestep any Nepo Baby allegations. I always could rap and always liked to rap, but I strayed away from it completely, Diggy tells Hip Hop DX. I didn't want people thinking I was doing this just because of my family. The way I started everything was just personal. I was just recording songs by myself, and it escalated to my friends being like, this stuff is good, take it seriously. So I did. I put some stuff up on YouTube, and this was the blog era. So I just kept making connections and meeting people on Twitter. As his mixtapes began receiving some attention, Diggy claimed he had some big plans, and envisioned working with some major artists.
I'd love to work with Ye, Yeezy, and
But why is that? Why Kanye?
Love Kanye. He's been like a huge inspiration, honestly, musically, all around. You know, from 808s and Heartbreaks to College Dropout, Late Registration, all of that. You know what I'm saying? So Kanye's been a huge inspiration, and I'd love to work with Ye. Who else would be great? I think it would be cool to work with Adam Levine on a Maroon 5. I think his vocals are amazing. I think he can do a real cool hook. I'm not really like genre-wise, I'm not close-minded. And who else would I love to work with? Then one day, Jig the Jigga Man.
However, it's safe to say that none of these came to fruition for Diggy, but he was picked among the 2011 XXL freshmen before scoring a BET New Stars Award that same year.
I'm feeling good, rather I'm feeling great. The game got me feeling over, I don't feel the aches. I'm trying to eat, you trying to steal my plate. All the hate, throw it out the front door, full of banks. I know I can, but you say I can't. They think my hype is all gas, but you feel my tank. Hell, you fuel me with what you cruelty, and I'm a beast on the mic, and that's the beauty. I'm Illmatic Nas, Reasonable J. My Adidas run, that's reasonable to say. In the season, I'm a thudder when I hit them with my rain. When your boy raises hell, everybody better say, hey, men and women too. We don't hang because misery left the miserable. But if your life's love, let's kick it like Flight Club. Let's have a great day and see what the night does.
As for 2012, his Atlantic-backed debut album Unexpected Arrival reached a peak of number 13 on the charts. With that, he seemed to have found a foothold in music. He even got involved in a largely forgotten beef with J. Cole over his alleged failed romance with his sister Vanessa, spitting venom in his direction on the track Fall Down as he declared, I guess I rattled you, Snaggletooth, you know better. Thought J stood for Jermaine, not Jet Setter. You seen me and shook my hand, cop and please in person. Now you act less than a man, mention me in verses. Sneak disses and jabs, I don't really see the benefit, but I guess you lame enough, probably keep you relevant. Although he had the public's attention, Diggy didn't capitalize on it. Soon, he underwent a hiatus from music, a situation which he later chalked up in interviews to a battle with his mental health, which rendered him paralyzed to do anything creative.
Right.
So where has Diggy been? Did you get scared? Did the industry scare you off?
No, man, you know what it was? Too much, like, just overthinking the process. I have OCD, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Just
that's like obsessive compulsive.
Exactly.
Disorder.
Just like overthinking every little thing. And that was like my issue, caring too much about what people think, or, you know, putting too much thought into everything, to where like the creative process didn't become fun anymore. It was like a task. So I had to get back to a place where I was just like, have fun again and kind of block all the outside noise, the social media, the comparisons, the all of that. Because that gets in the way, you know, when you're not focused on you. And there's a lot of ways that you don't focus on you when you're just rolling.
After a 6-year gap between projects, Diggy tried to push on, experimenting whenever he could, and actually tapping into the drumless hip-hop sound around the same time, where people like Rock Marciano and Westside Gunn would make it a new coke rap niche in New York.
First of all, you have a song called
It Is What It Is. Yes, I have a song called It Is What It Is.
It's a song with no drums.
Yes.
Why is that? Why no drums? Okay. Because I don't know if you ever heard of Run DMC, but they had a lot of big drums in their songs.
They did.
You want to be so different from your dad.
No.
Okay.
No.
Why no drums?
So this is what happened.
Put some goddamn drums in your song.
There are drums in the song.
Right.
Well, not that song, but other songs.
Okay.
So what had happened was...
By the way, it's a great song.
Thank you.
Just letting you know.
I just had that part initially.
Yeah.
And I just rapped over it. And like we made the song without him. We're like, oh, we're going to add drums.
We'll add it later.
By the end of like the whole album, making the album, we were just like, it sounds fire without it.
Got it.
Let's just not add it. Like,
okay.
Let's not do it when everything right now is just like about the beat. Everything's like 808s and everybody's, you know.
But he didn't get the plaudits for it, and the album failed to chart, proving once again that the worst thing you can do when you're hot in hip-hop is take your foot off the gas. Instead of striving forward in music, Diggy is now better known for his role as Chloe Bailey's boyfriend in the Black-ish spinoff, Grown-ish. During the spell, he teased new music that has yet to materialize.
Now, Diggy, you are someone who's always putting out music. Can we expect anything soon?
Very soon.
Yes.
Very soon. Yeah, I've been working on music.
You know, who would you love to collab with?
You know what? My castmates. Everybody is so talented in the crew, whether it's Trevor, Chloe, Hallie. And, you know, we've all kind of just done stuff together, or just, you know, have been creative or in creative spaces together. And it flows so effortlessly, so that would be a beautiful thing to do.
Are you in the studio right now, or will you be there soon?
Altogether, no, but I've been making music myself, yes. And Trevor and I, we've done so many projects together, so much music together, so you could see more of that too.
I love
definitely.
That.
And as time went on, it looks increasingly unlikely that it ever will. And if it does, then taking yet another lengthy break certainly won't help its commercial prospects. Although Diggy let his opportunity slip, there are other former child stars who have been permanently active in a way that's presented its own problems. Because by never taking a break and being a little too online, Soulja Boy has been on a run that's proven detrimental to his own rightfully influential legacy. When he first emerged onto the scene, it's fair to say that Soulja Boy basically revolutionized how hip-hop was distributed.
When I was getting money, it was called SoundClick. Now they got SoundCloud. It was a website called SoundClick. And I was getting 50,000 downloads a day. I was charging 99 cents for the song, but they would take a 50% split. So I was getting 25,000 a day in high school. You feel what I'm saying?
As fully embracing his status as a child of the internet generation, Soulja Boy managed to use underhanded tactics to get his music heard. And the results were incredible.
I learned that it was a real career. It was real money. It was real, like, fans. I was in the hood trapping and shit, selling dope, selling weed. You know what I'm saying? Doing all type of shit. Then bam, I did my first show. They gave me like 1,500. Huh. I quit and I just kept doing it. My next show was 7,000.
Huh. And this is before Crank That?
I had Crank That then.
Okay, so you dropped Crank That?
Yeah, but I was just in the streets. I didn't want to sign yet. Crank That came out before the deal. They just blew it up when I got signed. This is how I got popping. They had an app called LimeWire. And
right.
It was basically illegally downloading shit.
Yeah, it was Napster and LimeWire was kind of neck and neck at that point.
Yeah, so bam, I made a LimeWire account. I would download all the songs. I would look at the Billboard charts, top 20. I download those 20 songs. I upload them to LimeWire. And I upload Crank That to LimeWire. And I title it 50 Cent in the Club. Britney Spears, Woody Woody Woo. Eminem, do da 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 da. Whoever the fuck was popping at that time. Then they'll go, they'll download that song free. Like, I'm finna get 50 Cent at the club. They'll hit download, they hit play, it'll go, you don't. So they're like, what the fuck is this about? You know what I'm saying? About probably like a minute in, they're like, damn, this shit hard. And
launched into the stratosphere by his hit track, Crank That, Soulja Boy was only 17 years old when he first topped the Billboard Hot 100. Relieving hip-hop of its lyricism in favor of flow and vibe, Soulja Boy was hated by the hip-hop establishment of the time, most notably Ice-T.
So I apologize, Soulja Boy, for telling you to eat a dick. That was just in anger. You understand? Because truthfully, you know, a brother of my caliber shouldn't be talking down on a youngster your age. But as far as your music goes, it's garbage, you know? And I'm saying that for all of hip-hop for me. You know, these kids that go in the studio and really try to rap. They really sit down with a pen and write stuff, you know what I'm saying? And this ain't no old school, new school. This ain't no East Coast, West Coast drama, you dig? I'm feeling Lupe Fiasco. I'm feeling, you know, Lil Wayne, you know, Young Jeezy. You dig what I'm saying? I'm talking about your garbage. We got to get rid of that, man. Hip-hop has to last forever. It ain't gonna last with you doing that Superman bullshit, man. That shit is whack. And trust me, there will be ramifications. Not from me, but from hip-hop. You done fucked up, little homie. You were supposed to take that.
But by contrast, this hate from the old guard made him beloved by the new audience and led to his debut album debuting at number 4 on the charts. Later down the line, tracks like Kiss Me Through the Phone would also be major hits. But that major track from the late 2000s would mark his last time in the upper reaches of the billboards. In fact, he hasn't appeared on any of them whatsoever since 2010. Despite this, Soulja Boy has been seen as influential by artists who grew up listening to him and taking notes with how he engaged with audiences.
I mean, growing up, it was probably Soulja Boy and Lil B. I feel like they were, you know, I feel like Soulja Boy was one of the smartest when it came to just being, and, you know what I'm saying, connecting with your fans and taking that to another level.
Mm.
That's how you get the real love, you know? Like, someone will love you, but if they feel like they know you or they can relate to you, you know what I'm saying, it's a real, genuine, solid love, even when you're down.
But alongside that, there has been a whole lot of disrespect which has come his way, as he has become increasingly viewed as a flop.
50 in food stamps or dinner with Soulja Boy?
Food stamps.
Food stamps? What the fuck?
250 food stamps.
250 in food stamps?
I'm gonna pick the food stamps only because Soulja Boy's not nobody. I can have dinner by myself.
Food stamps.
The food stamps.
Food stamps. I don't give a fuck that corny ass.
250 and food stamps.
I don't give a fuck about no Soulja Boy. 250 and food stamps.
To give me the food stamps, I can't make some chicken Alfredo.
I didn't do that Soulja Boy lease since I was 12. Give me the food stamps.
I'm taking food stamps. Fuck that. Who is that?
Suck my. They gonna never make it out the hood. Y'all niggas gonna die broke. I wanna have dinner with y'all A's and 50 hoes anyway. I would not have dinner with no broke ass jersey anyway.
This is a byproduct of the way in which Soulja Boy has become a laughingstock over time, and no small part of his claims that he invented everything.
Man, I'm the first rapper on YouTube.
Okay.
I'm the first rapper on Twitch. I'm the first rapper to get signed straight off the internet from high school to a record deal to Jimmy Iovine and Interscope Records for over $1 million. Man, stop playing with me. I'm always doing a song with a before they get signed. Then once these get famous, I can't even get a song from these no more. That's crazy. But when y'all was in the hood and ain't nobody know who the fuck y'all was, I was doing songs with y'all. Chief Keef, Lil Durk, Migos, Famous Dex. Only I did a song with now was Rich the Kid. Ain't real. I'm still having this, still having motion. Really don't need no song with you. All the gotta do is look up Soulja Boy, Lil Durk, Eater. This man, first mixtape. I'm talking about nobody knew who Lil Durk was. Nah, get a record deal. Where the f*** my feature back at?
Don't play with...
Along the way, he's feuded with countless rappers, and things have gotten so bad that the antics are his bread and butter now, as opposed to the music.
What you talk about old,
what's old about your BM? Sucking my...
What did you... Why are you talking about shit before she even met
nigga,
you,
bro? Baby mama the day before your baby showers.
Nigga... Why is you on here? So you on here popping it like that? So check this out, right? What you want, my? You want a cookie? You want a cookie?
Oh.
You want a cookie?
You
let's give Blueface a cookie and a Happy Meal and a Soulja toy. Blood.
Yeah.
You. So what, blood?
Hey, there you go. Admit that.
Now nearly permanently disrespected, Soulja Boy's mismanagement of his brand has meant that he's releasing music to a smaller and smaller audience. And now, there are likely kids out there who only know him as an internet personality as opposed to a rap pioneer for the online world.
The funny part about this is if it wasn't for platforms like Vlad TV, No Jumper, Academics, and Say Cheese TV, Soulja Boy wouldn't be doing Rolling Loud. He'd be doing state fairs, just like all the other mid-2000 rappers out there. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, you're probably right. And to be honest, like, can you imagine us posting about just what Soulja Boy having a decent Rolling Loud show. We have to post about the other 117 people that are on the Rolling Loud flyer too, right? I can't believe that he has the nerve to try to blame us after having kept him relevant for all these fucking years, because it's clearly not the music that's keeping him relevant.
No.
Soulja Boy has benefited from it massively, and that not only has benefited from it, but it's the only thing he's benefiting from at this point, because let's be real, your music ain't hot like that.
For Soulja Boy, it must feel like his run at the top was incredibly short-lived and has been followed by a whole decade plus teetering close to irrelevance. But if you think his fall-off is rough, it's nothing compared to what Lil Romeo has experienced, leaving him downgraded from major star to being perceived by the public as a spoiled nepo baby with resentments to spare. The son of No Limit Records owner and overall New Orleans legend Master P, Lil Romeo's biggest success came when My Baby peaked at number 3 on the Billboard charts. At the time, he was just 11 years old. That same year, he scored a gold certified album, all the while, he lived in the lap of luxury.
I'm Lil Romeo, y'all about to see my crew. Come on. First of all, I'm gonna just show y'all my living room. Yellow, green, orange men. We call this right here the competition room because everybody trying to compete. This is where the losers sit at. I don't like to sit right there because when you lose off the game, you gotta come sit right here and wait your turn.
In the process, he racked up awards with his father, standing by his side every step of the way.
And the rap artist of the year is... Together, guys. Lil Romeo!
11-year-old Lil Romeo also wins the Billboard Music Award for Rap Single of the Year for My Baby.
And for the man who made this all possible for me, my homie, my friend, my teammate, my dad, Master P. Ooh-wee!
Ooh-wee! Peace, we love y'all.
Okay.
Despite the initial success, Romeo's sophomore album Record Game Time and its follow-up, Romeo Land, both underperformed in comparison. And at the age of just 14 years old, it looked like his rap career was basically over. In line with the general decline of No Limit itself, the label's previous dominance gradually wore down to irrelevance before they ceased completely in 2006. From there, he focused on sport, showing real promise as an NBA prospect, and even getting a basketball scholarship for the USC Trojans. But he never made it to the league. And in this regard, his father claimed that he'd been held back by his family's fame and success.
Now, I wanted to ask you because, you know, your son, Romeo, huge basketball player growing up, played at USC.
Yeah.
You know what happened with Diddy's son?
Yeah.
He quit the UCLA football. I mean, not Diddy's son, Snoop's son.
Yeah.
Snoop's son quit the UCLA football team.
Yeah.
Because he was saying he was playing more for his dad than for the love of the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're doing that for somebody else, then you shouldn't do it. You got to love it. You know, basketball is a sport. If you love it, that's what I did. I'm not going to play for nobody. When Romeo played, he played for himself. I want to be the best player he could be. So if it's not something you want to do, then you don't need to do it.
So you weren't forcing him to play basketball. He was doing it on his own.
Oh, no. He loved it.
He loved it.
He loved it. He's been playing from a little kid. He's been good. If he wasn't Romeo, he'd probably be in the NBA right now.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
He probably would be in the NBA.
Yeah.
After the NBA dream never materialized, he began dabbling in acting and even had a brief modeling career. Along the way, he even appeared on Dancing with the Stars. But no matter what he did, it was clear that his days at the forefront of culture were gone. And at the time, it was assumed that he was perfectly happy with this. After all, he and his dad previously put on a united front, with Master P standing by Romeo as he made the decision to quit the reality TV show Growing Up Hip Hop. But this narrative changed following the death of Master P's daughter, Tatiana Miller, from an accidental overdose.
I love my daughter, man. I miss her. And I always was her parachute. But now she my parachute up in the sky looking over me. And we ain't gonna breathe no more. We gonna celebrate because now I'm gonna be able to take care of millions of kids and save millions of lives. I'm gonna get out here and play my part. I know that God put me in this world for a passion and a purpose. Mental illness and substance abuse is a serious thing. I want y'all to sing my daughter's theme song with me.
Thank you. After Master P shared his condolences for DJ Twitch, who died by apparent suicide, Romeo went off on his dad, declaring that his messages about mental health were offensive, considering how little he's done to help his own family out of similar binds. Today was a boiling point. Romeo said in a post that was later deleted, "I seen a man avoid his own children struggling with suicide and depression, but post another man who passed away that he doesn't even know. Y'all idols be lost. Better stop following the blind. Watch when it's revealed." Afterwards, he doubled down, claiming that, "The world's gonna find out that outside of a gift or a car, I've never been paid anything I've accomplished as Lil Romeo. You only pay outsiders rightfully so they'll speak good about your name. This is my last straw, Pops. Stop trying to play the victim. I loved you so much that I followed you blindly for 30 plus years," he continued. "You know that we talked behind closed doors. You aren't the man who you paint to be. And why is it war? Because I refuse to follow your lead. You only want to protect your image. But the image isn't even real. I tried to keep things in house. You are addicted to social media and unfortunately use this app as therapy. 3,000 plus posts? As it all went down, the world was horrified to see such a tight-knit family fall apart in front of the world's view. But for the most part, everyone was on P's side and believed this wasn't the way to go out if Lil Romeo had a grievance.
I think that you handle this in a different way than handling it publicly."
"Well, he said, we've had conversations in private quite a few times. I've exhausted that."
"Gotcha.
So now I'm going public with it because his beef isn't over the money, what Romeo was saying. It's over the false image that P keeps putting out. I'm this family man. It's all good over here." He's like, "That's not the case. We, as in me, moms, all of this, we have been having this beef with you for quite some time. We kept it quiet to keep your image up. And we're not doing that no more." That's kind of what Romeo was saying. Like, even a Rap Snacks, he was like, "I was told we owned Rap Snacks. And for the last 15 years, he said, my pops been telling me once we sell it, then we'll get the, you know, you'll get the money worth of it. He said, I've never gotten a single check or anything from Rap Snacks."
As for Master P, he was horrified by what went down, claiming it was all financially motivated. In a video he posted online, P seemed baffled by his son's lack of gratitude, as well as his inopportune timing by picking the same period where they were grieving the loss of their sister and daughter to bring all this to the fore.
"Like, if you've been in the business for long as you've been in, and you're a 30-something-year-old man, and if you've been around me watching me hustle and do my thing, why are you not where you want to be at? Because that means you're not listening. That means you want to do your own thing. You done brought your own circle of people, but you can't get mad at me because I really thought this was about, the only reason I entertain this on social media, I thought this was about the DJ Twitch post I put up, and I thought it was about my daughter's death. I thought you was grieving. Mental illness is real. But I want to tell all the people out there that just don't understand how bad my heart hurt. Romeo lost a sister, but I lost a daughter. And for any parent that's going through this, because I know debt, it brings people closer together or it tear them apart. But I come from nothing, y'all. And I could go back. I'm cool with it. I won't be angry at God. I won't be upset. I won't go get mad and be disrespectful to my parents and none of that stuff. I just said, Dad, thank you for putting me in this world."
Besides that, he felt like people were rooting for them to fail after the Miller family had won for so long.
"All you got to do is pick up the phone and call me or come to the house and holler at me. The saddest thing about this is what the people want to see. They want to see destruction. So if you destroy me, what are you going to do for the rest of the family? Are you going to take care? You told me on the post that you put up, oh, you go take care of people in the community. That was supposed to do when you come from that. You go help people. I'm just not helping ungrateful people. I'm not an ATM machine. People can't just say they love me when I give them something. I'm tired of that, y'all. And any other parents, you could be rich or poor at a smaller level. You might give your kids $10, but if that's all you got, I've always fell off, got back up, hustled, did my thing."
When Romeo was getting rinsed online for being spoiled, people respected the way his father addressed it. As rough as this was, it is believed that they ultimately squashed the beef as 2023 began, with Romeo posting a lengthy statement online. "In order to be used, you have to be willing to be misunderstood and humiliated sometimes," he wrote. "I'm willing to fall on my sword for minds. It was never about parent versus child, or this false narrative or that. It was about doing whatever had to be done for the growth of the family. Today, December 31st, me and my father, Master P, had a very hard conversation. Ironically, outside in the rain. But in order for any generation to grow, that communication has to be had and reciprocated on both sides. The good, the bad, and the ugly. No matter the journey ahead, our family can truly begin to heal, and I believe many others will use our story as an example to learn from. No longer at war, P suggested it was all good now, and that he'd go to war for his son at a moment's notice."
"Last thing, what's up with Romeo, man?"
"That's my son.
Hey, what you mean, what's up?
That's, I mean, family.
Man, let me tell y'all something. One thing about me and family,
it's family.
It could be me, C, whatever. We might have disagreement. Go against one of us and see what's going to happen.
I'm putting you
on the float. I'm telling you straight up. I'm flatlining you behind mines. Everything. That's my son. That's the only thing I flatline you behind, my son.
But no matter where it stands for their family, Lil Romeo has entered the ranks of yet another child star who has now damaged his reputation to the point that even if he wanted to try and re-up his rap career, the audience that once clamored to hear what he had to say is no longer listening. Based on what we've seen, it suggests that being a rapper who gained their fame as a kid does more harm than good. Instead, you're better off waiting until you are an adult and are ready for the pressures that come with having all eyes on you. Because while you get fame as a kid, trying to sustain the kind of bag you once commanded has proven to be near enough impossible. And that's before you even get to the damage your public image will take over the years.